back, steps up, heaves one down the middle of the field into the end zone, and Nix makes the catch for the touchdown. He went up with the big hands and caught it on the Hail Mary.
Boots one, returnable for Williams from his own 20. Lost the ball, and the Giants say they have it. They do.
Devin Thomas recovered it, but the rookie Jaquan Williams punched it out.
Manning out of the shotgun set, he's back to throw. Finds the pocket. Deep ball down the left sideline, and it's going to be caught. Was he inbounds? Yes. Manningham on the sideline. Brady's under pressure. Brady's chased. Brady heaves one down the middle of the field into the end zone. A jump ball, and it's incomplete, and the ball game's over, and the Giants have won Super Bowl 46.
Now, here's your host, Lance Meadow.
Well, we were going to start off this morning's show previewing the Philadelphia Eagles as it is getting set for week 4 in the NFL, and instead, we are talking about controversy in the NFL as last night between the Packers and the Seahawks. I'm sure everybody saw it by now, the multiple replay angles. A controversial ending that handed the Seahawks victory. And the Packers right now are scratching their heads, as well as the NFL. We'll get into that. Dave Spadaro will join us a bit later on in the show from PhiladelphiaEagles.com to help us preview the Week 4 matchup. And we'll be taking your phone calls all throughout the next hour here on Big Blue Kickoff Live. 201-939-4513 is the telephone number, 201-939-4513. You can also chime in on the conversation on Twitter, hashtag Giants Chat. You can follow and interact with me on Twitter, at Lance Meadow, one word, last name spelled M-E-D-O-W. So the Green Bay Packers, in heartbreaking fashion, fall to the Seattle Seahawks last night, 12-7. And it certainly shouldn't have even been in that position. 13-12, excuse me, as the Packers were up 12-7 late in the fourth quarter, and then Russell Wilson threw up that Hail Mary that gave Seattle the victory. Now, what you may not realize at this point, and this is where you really got to dig deep into the rule book. One official called it a touchdown. Another official called it an interception. And they did go under the hood to look at it and to see whether or not they could overturn the call. But everybody thought that they were looking at the replay to determine whether or not they could actually overturn the touchdown. And they really couldn't, because the initial call essentially was a simultaneous catch on the field, in which MD Jennings and Golden Tate both secured the football. The problem is, you can't review a simultaneous catch. And I'm reading this exactly from the rule book. This is under section AR 15.103. And you can imagine, if it's this complicated for the average fans, the situation and the position that the replacement officials are in right now. And it reads the following. Simultaneous catch, not reviewable. B's ball, first and 10 on A45. This is the exact language and terminology that I'm reading from. A simultaneous catch in the field of play is not reviewable. The only aspect of this play that is reviewable is whether the pass was complete or incomplete. A review of this play can only be initiated by the replay official. So the only thing they could look at when they went under the hood was if Golden Tate or MD Jennings actually let the ball hit the ground. That's the only thing at that perspective that they could look for to see whether or not there was a reason to overturn it. But you can't overturn whether or not it was a simultaneous catch. And to me, what I was flabbergasted after they went under the hood was that there wasn't enough evidence to overturn the fact that it was a simultaneous catch. Because from all the angles that I looked at things, it appeared as if MD Jennings went up, secured the football, came down with it, and once he's on the ground, Golden Tate then puts two hands on the football. You can make the argument he had one hand on the football as MD Jennings came down, but at the end of the day, Golden Tate doesn't get two hands on this football until both players are secure on the ground. And because of the indecision showcased by the officials, it's a simultaneous catch. You could go under the hood, but the only thing they're looking for is whether or not the ball hit the ground. So you can't, at that perspective, overturn the touchdown. And that's what made things even more complicated. And the Packers are not pleased about it. If you look at any Packers account on Twitter, you'll certainly see the reaction. And the league has yet to really make a formal announcement or reaction to what took place last night. They're supposed to either have a statement or hold some type of presser by the end of the day. So we'll be very interested to see what their take is on all of this. But at the end of the day, I mean, how much more motivation do you need to get the regular officials back on the field? Now, this is way beyond union issues at this point. This is about the integrity of the game, the safety of the game, and to prevent further embarrassment from being played out on the football field. And we're really not going to know the true implications of last night's contest until you get maybe to week 15 and week 16 and week 17 when teams are fighting for those last couple of playoff spots. Because who's to say the Packers don't miss the playoffs by one game? Or the Seahawks maybe get in because of this victory. We're not going to know that until much later on in the season. Just like we were discussing in relation to the Giants with that Buccaneers game. You don't know the implications of a heartbreaking win or loss until you get to when all of a sudden the playoff picture starts to develop. So this is going to be discussed to death for weeks to come. And controversy will not die down by any means, especially with no timetable in sight for the regular officials to come back. As long as the replacement officials are still out there running the show, you're going to have more controversy, you're going to have more headaches, and you're going to have more close calls. And it's unfortunate for the game because even though the Packers are the ones that are suffering the most from this call, it could have happened to any team in this league. Could have been the Giants, could have been the Redskins, could have been the Eagles, and so forth. There were a lot of borderline calls over the first 3 weeks. This one is amplified more because of the timing in which it happened. And it's a shame that the officials ultimately decided a game. And I've been preaching for weeks, you can't blame the officials, it's the replacements, they're still digesting the playbook, they're calling it evenly both ways, there's a lot of pushing and shoving at the line of scrimmage. But now all of a sudden you're bringing into play a call that determined the outcome of the game. There's no other way to look at this anymore. It was their interpretation of that final play. If they would have ruled it an interception and both been on the same page, they could have went under the hood, confirmed it, taken multiple angles. The fact that there was indecision on the part of the officials, one called it a touchdown, one called it an interception, that gets interpreted as a simultaneous catch. And the unfortunate aspect of a simultaneous catch is you cannot review that play. And this is part of the technicalities of the rule book. What you can debate is the interpretation of what a simultaneous catch is. That's a whole other topic. A simultaneous catch is when the offensive player and the defensive player both go up, have two hands on the ball at the same time, and come down with it together. That was not what happened last night. MD Jennings secured the football, came down with it, then Golden Tate joined the party. And from the official's perspective, I can understand this happens in real time. If you're not looking at it from a direct angle, it's hard to necessarily right there call interception or touchdown. But why didn't they huddle? That's what's baffling about this thing. They looked at one another, and this is going to become a poster. And I've got the photograph in the newspaper already. You've got one official holding up the touchdown signal and another one waving off as an interception. But there was no huddle. They didn't look at one another. They didn't bring the other officials into play and say, listen, are you sure what you saw from that angle? Are you positive? And then maybe move forward. I mean, it was complete disarray how this game ended. And a championship wasn't on the line last night. It's still only 3 weeks into the season. But again, that's fine to discuss it from that perspective in week three. When everyone looks back at this game in week 16, it's going to be a whole other story. The old cliche in the NFL is every game is important. Well, the reason why we throw it out there is because of situations like this. This game could have ultimately determined whether the Packers or the Seahawks make or miss the playoffs. That's the unfortunate part of things. And if you want to get really technical, certainly, there's a lot of criticism going the way of the Packers. Number one, MD Jennings should have been in position to bat the ball down. Why did he go for the interception? Number two, why did the Packers put themselves in a situation that they gave the Seahawks prime field position? They failed to execute on that previous offensive possession because they backed themselves so far into the end zone that their punter didn't have a lot of wiggle room. So there's a lot of things that went wrong for the Packers in those final minutes. And that is being nitpicky for the most part. That should not excuse what took place on the final play. But now everything's going to be put heavily under the magnifying glass because of what took place last night. And if this doesn't give the league some extra ammunition to get back on the negotiating table, and everybody's got to make some sacrifices so that the real officials can return and they could try to restore some order in the NFL. If that doesn't happen, it's going to be a very, very long NFL season. And this is not going to be the last example of controversy between now and Week 17. I can guarantee you that. 201-939-4513 is the telephone number. We're also talking Giants. We don't want to get completely off topic as the Giants are 2-1 preparing to go up against the Philadelphia Eagles on Sunday Night Football. As I mentioned a little bit later on the show, Dave Spadaro of PhiladelphiaEagles.com will join me to help break down the Philadelphia Eagles, who are coming off a tough loss to the Arizona Cardinals in the desert. But we're going to open up the phone lines right now, and we start with Junior in Brooklyn. Junior, what's happening?
Hi, good morning, man.
What's going on, Hello? Junior? What you got?
Yeah, I just want to say, I have two quick little things I want to say. First, my heart broke to see how the game ends last night because I'm a real football fan. But at the same time, the Packers have to put some of the blame on themselves. Because for a team like the Packers, they should have never in the position where they have to be fighting for their life like that. And second thing, I just want everybody to shut up and leave the Giants alone because I don't want to hear nobody has said, but, oh, the Giants is this and the Giants. Because if anybody in this league proved that they can overcome hindrances and do big things, it's the Giants.
All right, well, appreciate the phone call, Junior. No argument on your last point. I think the Giants proved last season, and they continue to prove this season, that they are able to overcome obstacles, they are able to overcome injuries, and they are able to overcome bad calls. But what happened last night is not just about the Giants, it's not just about the Packers, it's about the state of the NFL right now, and that the officials took the next step last night in determining the outcome of a game. And that's the most troubling aspect of what you can take away. You never want to be in a position where the guys in stripes are the ones determining who wins and loses a football game. You want to leave it for the players. And as I mentioned right before we opened up the lines, you can put blame on the Packers for putting themselves in that predicament. Had they executed a little bit better down the stretch, perhaps they're not giving Seattle an opportunity to even have a realistic chance at a Hail Mary. I mean, the punt allowed Seattle to essentially start their drive around the Packers' 45-yard line. And even though Russell Wilson wasn't efficient in completing one pass after the other, he still had a legitimate chance to throw up a Hail Mary. He gave himself and his team an opportunity to make a play. And Green Bay is probably scratching its head why they allowed them to have such good field position. And the other thing that is troubling aspect of last night's finish is it was a very good, solid defensive game. Green Bay played great. Seattle played great. Seattle's been one of the pleasant surprises in the NFL. A lot of youth on this defense that Pete Carroll has infused, and they have shown consistency in the first 3 weeks of the season. I mean, look at the NFC West, for example. Who would have thought that would have been one of the most strongest divisions right now? On paper, heading into the season, you would think the Niners are going to run away with things. The Cardinals are going to struggle because of their quarterback disarray. The Seahawks are young. Can they take the next step, though, with a rookie quarterback? And the Rams have a new coach. Sam Bradford, can he stay healthy? And has their defense improved? There were questions top to bottom in that division. And now all of a sudden, you look at that division, you've got the Cardinals are 3-0. The Niners are looking up at the Cardinals, as well as the Seahawks. That's football. That's the parity of the league. That's what makes the league great. Everybody normally has an opportunity, even down the stretch, as long as they can put together some key wins within their division. But we've never gotten to the point where we've seen this type of an outcome. There have been bad calls before. I don't know if anything tops this. 201-939-4513 is the telephone number. We go to Mike in New Jersey. Mike, what you got?
Hey, how are you guys? I was just wondering whether you thought the Giants should start Brown this week or start Bradshaw this week, considering how good Brown did on Thursday.
Thing that we certainly debated yesterday on the show, and we'll probably continue to pick up this discussion throughout the week. Listen, Andre Brown, to me, has proven that he can take on a bigger role for this offense. I think that in order for him to continue to be effective, he's not a guy that you can limit to five carries. You have to give him at least 10 to 12 carries. But at the end of the day, they are not going to allow Ahmad Bradshaw to lose his job strictly based on injury. They have a lot of money invested in him, and he's proven that he can carry the load. So what you'll probably see moving forward is more of a balance in the carries. I don't think they've gotten to the point where it's now 50-50. I would say it's more in the ballpark of 60-40. The positive from the Giants' perspective is ever since Brandon Jacobs left, there was a question as to, do the Giants have two reliable running backs? I mean, David Wilson was a top pick, but there were still questions as to how fast he would adjust to the NFL. Now I think after six solid quarters, Andre Brown has shown that he can be called upon. He's solid in between the tackles. He has shown consistency in pass protection. And as long as he can continue to excel in both of those categories, the Giants right now have a multi-dimensional backfield. And if you're a Giants fan and if you're a part of the coaching staff, you really can't complain from that perspective. So at the end of the day, you're going to see more of a balance. But I don't know if the Giants are at the point that Andre Brown is the starter right now.
All right, thanks, guys.
All right, Mike, appreciate your phone call. 201-939-4513 is the telephone number, 201-939-4513. And feel free to chime in on the conversation on Twitter, hashtag Giants Chat. You can also follow me on Twitter, at Lance Meadow, one word, M-E-D-O-W. We go to Tim in New Jersey. Tim, what you got? Tim, are you there? Okay, Tim, a man of very few words. If Tim has an opportunity to reconnect with us, we welcome you back on the program. We'll try our very good friend, Len, in Maryland. Len, what's happening?
Hey, how you doing? Len in Columbia, Maryland. You know, it's hard to ignore this impasse between the league and the referees, but I'm gonna try to do it and move on to the Philly game. I'm anxious to see what that Philly beat writer has to say, but here's what I'm thinking. The coaches at Philadelphia are spending 100 hours this week planning for the Giants, and I'm going to try to keep it real simple, because if I get too involved, I'll be talking about some stuff I know nothing about. I'm just a fan, but let me say, I think what the Eagles are going to try to do on defense, I think the game plan, the basic game plan, the framework for it, put Eli on his back. You know, if you get in terms of goals, let me just lay out some numbers. They want to knock him down 12 times. They want six sacks out of that. They'd like two interceptions and a fumble recovery. On offense, I think what the Eagles are going to do is McCoy left, McCoy right, McCoy up the middle, McCoy in the flat, McCoy down the field, McCoy gets 35 touches. What do you think?
Well, I think that they're certainly going to go heavy on LeSean McCoy, and I think that that's a great point, Len. Though what's surprising is you look back at the Cardinals game on Sunday, and part of this, I think, was strategy, because the Eagles were in such a big hole that they couldn't dictate the tempo of the game on the ground. He only had 13 carries and three catches. In order for the Eagles to thrive on offense, you've got to give McCoy anywhere from 20 carries on the ground and get him involved with 5 to 7 catches. So I agree.
Absolutely.
I think they're going to go real heavy with LeSean McCoy. They're going to try to test the linebacker core, and they're going to see whether or not a guy like Jaquan Williams can contain McCoy, who has the speed, and also try to contain Vic. So look to see an extremely heavy dose of McCoy, absolutely.
Yeah. I think, you know, if we have a goal, combined yardage, rushing, and pass receptions, we're looking at maybe 110 yards for McCoy. If we can keep it in that range, as many times as he'll touch the ball, I think we got a good chance. Now, I'm not sure the Eagles can pull that off. I'm just saying I think that's what the coaches are spending their hours on this week. And so I'll be interested to see what that beat writer has to say about what he thinks the Eagles' game plan is. Okay, listen, good show. Sorry we have to talk about the referees, but it's a fact of life, and we just got to move past it and win a football game.
Absolutely, Len, and appreciate the phone call. And by the way, those of you who are listening, all the numbers that Len threw out, pay close attention to that because I give him a lot of credit. It was last week he said that the Giants would hold the Carolina Panthers to 60 yards rushing. It wasn't 57, it wasn't 58, it wasn't 59. Look back at the box score. The Giants held the Panthers to exactly 60 yards, including six from Cam Newton. So if there's anybody who knows how to play the numbers game correctly, it is Len from Maryland. And we continue to tip our cap to one of our very good listeners here on Big Blue Kickoff Live. 201-939-4513 is the telephone number, 201-939-4513. Another factor to consider as the Giants are getting prepared to go up against the Eagles, Jeremy Maclin, their top receiver, aside from DeSean Jackson, did not play against the Cardinals. He's still nursing that hip injury, and we hope that Dave Spadaro from PhiladelphiaEagles.com can give us an update on what the chances are that Maclin will get out there. From the reports that I've read and heard, it appears that they're certainly optimistic he will get on the field, which is a big bonus for Philadelphia. Another guy to look out for is Riley Cooper, who's a special teamers and another key receiver. He's been battling a collarbone injury. If they can get him out, all of a sudden Philly has more weapons to line the Giants up out wide. And if there's anything that you think the Philly offense is going to try to take advantage of, to me, it's trying to pass the football. Even though I say they're going to go heavy with McCoy, if you look at the big plays that the Giants have given up over the first three games, they have given up some big plays through the air. And Philadelphia has not had a huge game through the air, mainly because Vic has not had a lot of time to throw the football. I mean, turnovers is one reason. 12 turnovers Philadelphia is at. 6 fumbles, 6 interceptions. Their turnover differential is -6. That's the second to worst turnover differential in the league. That usually is not a recipe for victory. And it's stunning that they're 2-1 despite all of those turnovers. Number two, Vic's been sacked 9 times. They've had some injuries to the offensive line. They lost their center, Jason Kelce, to a season-ending knee injury. So they're playing somewhat of a game of musical chairs. The Cardinals were very effective in getting pressure on Michael Vick, forcing him to make bad decisions. So if you're the Giants' front four right now, and the Giants' front four is still looking really for its coming out party in terms of quarterback hits and sacks, they've had some impact plays, but no consistency. You've got to be licking your chops at this Eagles offensive line. If there is one advantage I would have to give the Giants, it's to set the tempo with the line of scrimmage. There is no reason why, on paper, the Giants should not be able to win in that category. Let's open up the lines once again, and we go to Tim in New Jersey. Tim, how's everything?
Fine.
What you got, Tim?
Well, Akeem Nicks be able to play against the Eagles in Philadelphia on Sunday night?
Well, Akeem Nicks didn't play against the Carolina Panthers because of the short turnaround, and appreciate the phone call, Tim. Right now, I think the team and Akeem Nicks is optimistic that he will get out there on Sunday. And Nicks even said it himself, had the Giants played on Sunday as opposed to Thursday, he probably would have suited up and went out there. This is an injury that they're likely going to have to manage throughout the course of the season. They're going to take it very easy on him during the week, so that he doesn't expose that foot to more ground and pound throughout the course of the week. They just can't afford to have that happen because you don't want to take the chance that there's additional swelling or perhaps a setback. There hasn't been a setback with respect to the injury. It's just a matter of not giving it so much wear and tear in the first 3 weeks of the season that he perhaps would have to sit out an additional 2 to 3 weeks. So right now, I think the Giants and Akeem Nicks are optimistic he'll be out there for the Philadelphia Eagle game. But the bright spot, remember, to take away from that Panthers contest, the depth of this team was tested, and the depth of this team shined. Now, I'm not saying that the Giants long-term want Ramsey's Barden to take over for Akeem Nicks. The Giants in the long run are a stronger team when Nicks is out on the field, and he can make contributions. But to know that other guys can step up in the event of an injury is a nice security blanket to have. Same thing with respect to Andre Brown, who filled in admirably for Ahmad Bradshaw. And with respect to Bradshaw, because I know we haven't spent a great deal of time with respect to the injuries, and today's an off day for the players, so you really won't see your first full injury report until Wednesday when Tom Coughlin addresses the media and starts to move forward and focus on the Eagles. But Bradshaw has been medically cleared. So they are also feeling pretty good that he could potentially be back on the field. And it would give the Giants an opportunity to really showcase perhaps this two-headed monster. And maybe I should go so far as to say the three-headed monster, assuming they work David Wilson into some role. But right now, I think his primary contribution is going to come on special teams, more so than it will come in the backfield. Let's go to Jay in New Jersey. Jay, what you got? Okay. Jay having some technical difficulties. We will try to get reconnected with Jay if he has an opportunity to reconnect with us here on Big Blue Kickoff. Is the telephone number 201-939-4513. You can continue to chime in on the conversation on Twitter, hashtag Giants Chat. You can also follow me on Twitter at Lance Meadow, one word, last name spelled M-E-D-O-W, as the Giants and the Eagles both 2-1. At this point, they are tied for first place in the NFC East with the Dallas Cowboys. The Redskins all alone in second at 1-2. And this will be the second divisional battle for the Giants as they will travel to Philly. And they have had success in Philly, more so than they have had in New Jersey against the Eagles. It's actually been that way against the Cowboys. And you could say even the Redskins. Though for the Redskins, I think for the most part, they've had success both home and away. But it's been very interesting to see how the Giants thrive more so on the road than they do at home. And I think that the Giants are entering this game with a lot of confidence, given how they performed against the Carolina Panthers. The fact that the bench stepped up, answered the call. They probably played their most complete game from an offensive and defensive perspective. And they did that when they weren't even 100%. So I think that's probably what's extremely impressive about how the Giants performed. And moving forward, if they can get back or at least near to full health, you know, that's going to give the Giants a big bonus. Last season, remember, the linebacker core was a young group. But because of injuries, all of the rookies got a tremendous amount of playing time. And now they're benefiting from that. So just think, if you can give players in other positions those opportunities early in the season, how far ahead of the game will the Giants be come week 15 or week 16, where maybe you have somebody else that goes down due to an injury, or you need to go to a third wide receiver set, and you need to get creative or work David Wilson into a package? As I mentioned, just like it comes down to wins and losses at this stage early in the season, sometimes you won't truly see the implications of even a player's development until later on in the year. But this is the time that you need to turn to those players, especially in the case of the Giants, where they played so many games in the span of 2 weeks. Now it's going to return to some sort of normalcy, the fact that they're going to have most of their games moving forward to Sundays and Mondays. So that should help the team, and that should also help Akeem Nix in the long run, because he's not going to have any more short turnarounds. And by the way, speaking of injuries, another one I should update, Dominic Hixon has been cleared from a concussion. So right now it's looking better in terms of the chances of Nix, Hixon, and Bradshaw returning for Sunday against the Eagles. A lot will determine how well they get through practice. We open up the lines once again. Let's go to Jay in Jersey. Jay, what you got?
Hey, what's going on, man? I was just calling in to give a chime about our receivers. It's good to have four ready and able receivers to go out there for Eli, man, especially with Bennett playing the way he's playing. I think that's going to be very excellent for our offense. And on the defensive end, what's going on with Rivers? And I think the D-line is going to have a field day with this Eagles offensive line this week. I don't think that McCoy is going to have a big game. I don't see him getting 100 yards on our defense. We haven't really been allowing a lot of 100-yard rushes. Well, we haven't allowed a couple hundred-yard rushes this year. And I just see us beating these guys handily just based on the way they're playing and the way Vic is playing. And he's very frustrated. They're going to get up for us like they always do, but I just think at the end of the day we got too much offensive power. Nnamdi Asamoah, did they play zone in Oakland like while he was there? Because he doesn't seem like he could cover a receiver man-to-man. Like, what do you think about that coverage that he's been playing?
Well, Asamoah has struggled so far this season. During his days in Oakland, they lined him up just on one side. And normally he would match up with the top receiver for the opposition. And he was known as the likes of Darrell Revis is a shutdown corner, but he has struggled adjusting to the Philly scheme. There were plenty of miscommunications. It wasn't just Asamoah. There was a moment with the Arizona Cardinals where Kurt Coleman and Nnamdi Asamoah were on the sidelines looking at one another as if they never played together. So that was certainly a troubling aspect. And appreciate the phone call, Jay, as we're about to welcome in one of our special guests here this morning on Big Blue Kickoff. But I will touch on the status of Keith Rivers a little bit later on and the Giants' defensive line. But we want to get to the matter of fact, which is the Philadelphia Eagles will go head-to-head with the New York Giants Sunday night in Philadelphia. The Eagles falling to the Cardinals this past weekend, 27-6. And I now welcome in Dave Spadaro of PhiladelphiaEagles.com. Dave, appreciate the time. How's everything?
Hey, Lance. Good. How are you doing?
Doing well, Dave. Well, let's get right to it. One of the most troubling aspects for the Eagles thus far, 12 turnovers through the first three games, second to worst turnover differential in the NFL at -6. Why has protecting the football been such an issue for Philly?
I wish I could answer that question. It's not just been this year, though. It was a big problem last year. The Eagles in the red zone were just a giveaway machine, and it has continued into this year, and they overcame it the first 2 weeks of the season and didn't come close to doing so in week three. So, you know, I don't know. Michael Vick has been, it's been a huge problem for him. He's not been the only one, of course, but it is an epidemic. I mean, it is to the point now where it's just head scratching. And so I don't have the answer. I don't know if it's players trying to do too much or, you know, certainly defenses are going to go after the football when the Eagles have it. And, you know, the directive is go get some takeaways.
And a lot of the turnovers are occurring in the red zone, Dave. So you could pretty much make the argument, at least in the first two games, you take away the turnovers, those games don't even come down to the wire.
Yeah. Certainly in Cleveland, that was the case. And you know, against the Ravens, the Eagles take the opening kickoff, drive down the field, get into the red zone, and Michael throws an interception in the end zone, and end of that threat. So, yeah, there's no question about it. The difference is the Eagles' defense has played so well in the first two games, and they were able to help the offense by taking the football away, and just not the case for the Eagles on Sunday against Arizona. The Eagles just were thrashed from start to finish, and really everybody contributed to it. So interesting kind of a crossroads situation for Philadelphia this week against the Giants.
Yeah, I touched on this a bit earlier, the fact that the offensive line has had some issues that may have contributed to the turnovers, especially in protecting Vic. 9 sacks through the first three games, and now they're facing, as you well know, a very strong front four from the Giants. How do you see this matchup playing out between the Eagles O-line and the Giants' defensive line?
Well, I would tell you that it doesn't look good on paper for the Eagles right now. I mean, I don't know how they can match up at left tackle with what the Giants will bring from that side of the football. There's no answer for Jason Pierre-Paul. The Eagles are going to have to be, you know, with Dallas Reynolds making his second career start at center. I mean, the Eagles have lost the best left tackle in football in Jason Peters, his backup, King Dunlap, and their starting center, Jason Kelce. So what they tried to do Sunday against the Cardinals was run their offense as if they had all their personnel. Didn't work. So what modifications do they make? That's the key to me. How do they get the football out of Michael Vick's hands quickly and kind of stymie that big blue pass rush? It's the matchup of the game for me.
Talking with Dave Spadaro of PhiladelphiaEagles.com. And Dave, I know you had an article posted on your team's website, and one of the things you touched on in terms of trying to correct the woes for the Eagles was the role of LeSean McCoy. He was limited to just 16 touches in Sunday's loss. He had at least 20 carries in each of the first two games. I know when you're down by such a large margin and deficit, you tend to abandon the run, but how crucial is it for Philly to really lean on McCoy moving forward?
Yeah, there's no doubt. I mean, he's got to get his touches early in the game. Had just 7 touches in the first half. And it was just one of those games where they were so out of sorts in every phase of football. And obviously, you know, LeSean is a huge part of the offense, one of the best players in the NFL, and needs to get his touches. Didn't get his touches on Sunday. But when you're pass blocking the whole time, which he did, you're just not going to touch the football. So, Yeah, they got to get back to running the football a little bit, mixing it up, having more balance, keeping defenses off balance a little bit. They did a really nice job of that against the Ravens. The offensive line did not help Michael Vick at all on Sunday. First play of the game, they had an opportunity to go down the field. Michael didn't have a chance to throw the football because of the breakdown in protection. And look, the Giants, and I think every team, moving forward against the Eagles, you blitz, and you blitz some more. The Cardinals did it, I think, 24 snaps on Sunday. Vic was terrible in that capacity. So, look, it's a very simple edict. Get to Michael Vick, put pressure on him, make him move, and you've got a shot to beat this football team and to take the offense completely out of its element.
Well, two guys that certainly could help Michael Vick, Jeremy Maclin and Riley Cooper, they both missed Sunday's game due to injuries. What's the latest on those two in terms of their status for Sunday?
It sounds like Maclin has a chance to come back with the hip injury, that he's made some good progress, that he's on track, you know, hopefully to play. It sounds like Cooper is probably another week away.
You had mentioned the strength of the Giants' defensive line, and certainly I agree. I think that's a big storyline. And the Giants are coming off a solid performance against the Panthers. Yet when you look at how the team has performed defensively, it has given up some big pass plays in the first two games. So with that being said, Dave, how do you see the Eagles attacking the Giants' defense overall?
Well, very carefully. You know, I think that, you know, this offense likes to throw the football. I mean, they are a big play offense. You want to get McCoy into the open field. You know, again, if you can get the football out of Michael's hands quickly, allow McCoy to work against linebackers, even though the Giants have good ones, you know, he's just dynamic that way. If you can get DeSean Jackson and Maclin down the field, you've got to get Brent Celek working against the safeties. All of that sounds wonderful if you've got time to throw the football. And I know that, you know, the Giants have given up some plays and here and there, and that's just the way it is in the league. If you don't get the pressure, very difficult to cover on the backside, and they've had some injuries, and, you know, ideally that's what you want to look at. But, again, this offense has been so mind-bogglingly unpredictable, looking great for stretches and then turning the football over. I don't know what to expect. You know, the Eagles know that this is a team that won the Super Bowl last year, that's coming off a great win, that is just that has terrific offensive firepower. I mean, Tampa Bay found out that you can never have a lead too big against the New York Giants. So, you know, ideally you'd like to consume some clock, work your way down the field, and score touchdowns in the red zone. I don't think, you know, the way teams have played the Eagles' offense, they've played too deep coverage, safeties in a soft shell, not allowing DeSean Jackson to go down the field, making the Eagles work, you know, hoping for a turnover. I mean, it really, honestly, is almost like, okay, hey, now the Eagles are in the red zone, now let's dig in, because the Eagles have turned the ball over so much in the red zone the last 2 years. I don't know what the Eagles are going to do. Really, really challenging week for the offensive coaching staff. There's no doubt about it.
Talking with Dave Spadaro of PhiladelphiaEagles.com. Dave, yesterday Andy Reid, after backtracking from some of his words, did give Michael Vick a vote of confidence as the starting quarterback. And I know there's a lot of speculation swirling given some of his troubles and his turnovers. But how much of a short leash is Michael Vick on at this point? And are we close to potentially experimenting with Nick Foles?
You know, it's a great question. And I don't think Andy Reid is in a position where he can, quote, experiment at all. You know, the owner of the team, Jeffrey Lurie, was asked prior to the start of the regular season if, you know, if there's a repeat of last year when the Eagles were 8-8, does that mean Andy Reid stays? And the answer was no. They've got to be better than that. You know, this has got to be a playoff team, a team that makes a run in the playoffs, it sounds like. So I don't think you can experiment. Now, they really like their rookie quarterback, Nick Foles. He had a tremendous preseason when Michael was hurt. Big, strong, you know, looks the part, did a great job. But to go in and experiment right now, man, I don't think the coaching staff is in that position right now. So, you know, you got to make it easier for Michael. You've got to give him some easy throws and give the line opportunities to block and understand that, you know, you're not going to keep Pierre Paul and Umanura and Tuck and Rocky Bernard and all that crew, you're not going to keep them out if you're dropping back and holding the football for 4.5 seconds.
Dave Spadaro of PhiladelphiaEagles.com joining me here to break down the Giants-Eagles game. Dave, appreciate the insight and the time. Thanks so much.
My pleasure, and look forward to seeing you this weekend.
Sounds good, Dave. So Dave Spadaro of PhiladelphiaEagles.com chiming in on the conversation here on Big Blue Kickoff Live. 201-939-4513 is the telephone number, 201-939-4513. And it was interesting to really hear him describe the state of the Eagles offense. I don't know if I want to go so far to say it's in disarray at this point, but there's a lot of questions. They have to solve and answer a lot of questions at this point. As he mentioned, it is troubling to put your finger on as to why the Eagles have not been able to execute in the red zone. If you look at Philly's three games, the numbers are very telling, 12 turnovers. But it's not as if Philly can't move the football up and down the field. Because if you look at how many of those turnovers occurred in the red zone, I mean, that's mind-boggling. Philadelphia, for example, right before the end of the first half against Arizona, was knocking on the door. They were at the one-yard line. Vic gets hit from the blind side, coughs up the football. Arizona takes it the distance for a touchdown. Think about the swing of momentum there. And in the games against Cleveland and Baltimore, same thing. Key turnovers when it looked as if Philly was just about to get into the end zone, score points, and pad the lead or at least get on the board to ignite something. And if the Giants are studying this team carefully, which I know they are going to look to come up with some schemes to attack that offensive line. That is priority number one. And I know we've thrown that out in terms of the strategy in the weeks prior, and how stopping the run is so imperative. To me, I'm going to scrap all of those ideas, and I'm going to say pressure, pressure, pressure. They have a backup center in right now, Philadelphia. You've got to test him up the middle. They're moving tackles around. You've got to test these guys on the sides. Make Michael Vick run. Make him make some questionable decisions. I mean, that's why he's been so turnover prone. He's been flustered by the opposition. He's been trying to press the envelope, throw into double coverage, make plays all by himself, and then he loses track of ball security. There are plays to be made on the field for this defensive unit this weekend for the Giants. And they could very well make some big game-changing type of plays that perhaps you don't have to put the pressure and the burden of pulling out a victory on Eli Manning's shoulders. As I mentioned, there is a lot of momentum to build off of based on their performance against the Carolina Panthers. It was finally a game in which the Giants got off to a strong start and maintained that for four quarters, in which the offense and the defense balanced each other out. And also, for once, it was refreshing, I'm sure, for Giants fans. You didn't have to sit back and watch a game and see Eli Manning have to put together a fourth quarter comeback. Those are the type of games you want to be able to put together from week to week. You don't want to have to put together a performance in which Eli has to throw for 500-some-odd yards and score two touchdowns or more in the fourth quarter. We'll continue the conversation here on Twitter as well, hashtag Giants Chat. You can also chime in with me and interact at Lance Meadow, one word, M-E-D-O-W. We go back to the lines. We've got Brian in New York. Brian, what's happening?
Hey, Lance, I'd like to chime in about the more I think about this game, the more I like our chances. Two out of the last 3 weeks, we've faced mobile quarterbacks, and we pretty much shut down Cam Newton, and he didn't do much against us. And you throw in the fact that we've had, 10 days to prepare for Michael Vick? It seems like we have a pretty good chance of winning this game, better than normal.
Plus, Brian, you can make the argument the Giants are more familiar with Michael Vick than Cam Newton, even though they both bring that mobility factor to play, because the Giants have seen Michael Vick twice a year for the last couple of seasons, whereas the Panthers' offense is so unique that they had to spend a lot of time in the offseason just getting familiar with their scheme. So I agree. I think based on the team they're coming off against yet last week, and the fact that Philadelphia is similar in terms of their quarterback play, you have to feel pretty good about how this Giants defense will perform against the Eagles. And certainly appreciate the phone call, Brian. Plus, you have to feel good that the team is getting back to full strength, given that they've had more than a week to nurse injuries or had players sit out the Carolina games, such as Akeem Nicks, Dominic Hickson, and Ahmad Bradshaw. And then with respect to defense, and I did want to touch on Keith Rivers, because we did get a phone call before I had Dave Spadaro on the program here on Big Blue Kickoff. Rivers is still nursing the hamstring injury, so certainly he's going to be questionable. He re-aggravated it in that Carolina game. The positive for the Giants is they've got depth in that spot. And Michael Boley, if there is one player who has stood out in that linebacker core, it's been Boley. 3 games, 3 interceptions. 3 game-changing type of interceptions. Remember, in week one, has that big pick against Dallas, returns it all the way to the 2. The horse collar tackle brings it to the 1. Problem is the Giants couldn't capitalize. But you can't blame Michael Boley. He put themselves in a position to capitalize. They just could not knock it in. And then a game-sealing interception in the last 2 weeks. He's made an impact, given that he's missed all of the preseason and all of minicamp and all of the offseason workouts due to that lingering hamstring injury. Hamstrings have plagued this team for some reason. You got Cohen Hostley now dealing with hamstring injuries. Their status in question for Sunday. But Prince is now back. He's trying to regain his form. Corey Webster's playing with the fractured arm, hand I should say. He will have a cast on there, and he will be able to fight through that throughout the rest of the season. But you still want some depth in the secondary, especially when you want to experiment and put in an additional corner. So that's why the roles of Coe and Hostley are going to be imperative moving forward. Coe's trying to get over this lingering hamstring injury, and Hostley, remember, also contributes on special teams. Let's go back to the lines. We've got Bruno in Atlanta. Bruno, what's happening?
Not much, man. How you fellas doing?
Doing well, Bruno. What you got?
Question. I hear what you're saying about the defense, but I'm just curious. Do you think that we're going to be blitzing a lot more? Because, I mean, it seems like that's where Philadelphia is weak. Obviously, the offensive line issues that they have. Tuck, OC, Pierre Paul, Kiwanuka, they've been damn near invisible. So I'm a little nervous about this divisional game that we need to have. And our, it was encouraging to see Prince, the game he played, Hostley, the interception he got. So, like Warren Sapp likes to say, the back end has to work with the front end. But it seems like the front end is not holding up their end of the bargain for the Giants. Do you think we'll blitz more?
I think certainly that will be a big part of the game plan. The Giants, based on what they have seen on film from the Eagles' first 3 opponents, they wouldn't do themselves justice if they didn't blitz. They are going to bring the pressure on a banged-up Eagles offensive line and Michael Vick prone to turnovers. Those two factors alone should send a message to the Giants that you've got to send the full arsenal of weapons on that front 4 to Michael Vick and test him early. I can't see another game plan that they would try to implement. But you're right, and you touched on Warren Sapp's quote, and I've said it a lot. Secondary is only effective if the front 7's playing at the top of its game, and the secondary is aided. The front 7, I should say, is aided if the secondary is playing solid. It's vice versa. You need everybody to work in unison. And in the Carolina Panthers game, they were working in unison. There were a big play or two, but for the most part, they played solid 4 quarters. They are going to have to go after Michael Vick. Number one, you don't want to give him a lot of time to throw the football because all of these turnovers have been a result of him not having a lot of time. Number two, you don't want DeSean Jackson to get down the field because he's had some big games against the Giants. And you need to keep close tabs on LeSean McCoy. And you know how you take LeSean McCoy out of the game? It's what Dave Spadaro touched on earlier from PhiladelphiaEagles.com. The reason why McCoy hasn't had a lot of touches from game to game, specifically in the loss to the Cardinals, he's been used in pass protection. So if the Giants blitz all the time, McCoy's not going to be able to get into the rhythm of the game. He is going to have to serve as an additional offensive lineman. That's the position you want McCoy in. You don't want McCoy to run out into the flat and grab passes and pick up 5 yards here or there. You don't want McCoy to get some rhythm in between the tackles. You want McCoy to be worried about protecting Michael Vick. Bottom line, if the Giants can force the Eagles into that position, they will be in a very good position to walk away with a victory on Sunday. Goes without saying, you take away the biggest weapon from the Eagles, and the biggest weapon is LeSean McCoy. DeSean Jackson certainly is a dangerous player. But at the end of the day, McCoy is their workhorse. He catches the short passes. He works the ball on the ground. He's a game-changing type of player. Plus, remember, I know we've had some callers throughout this program say the Giants have done a good job not giving up a 100-yard rusher. LeSean McCoy has had success on the ground against the Giants. Now, a lot of it has come because of one big play. 2 years ago, he had that big run for a touchdown late in the game. One that happened in Philly and one that happened in New Jersey. That's why you have to focus on LeSean McCoy. You give him an opening, he will take full advantage of that. And all of a sudden, that opens up things for the Eagles' offense. And you allow Michael Vick to get in a comfort zone. That is something that the Giants can't afford. But the Giants can't say to themselves, we're really nervous about Jeremy Maclin. We're really nervous about DeSean Jackson. The Eagles are going to go wide. We need to primarily focus on them. The problem is, if you don't bring the blitz, Michael Vick's going to have time to throw the football. And if Michael Vick has time to throw the football, he either will hurt you with his legs or he will hurt you with his arm. The reason why he has not been able to do that in the first three games effectively is because he has had defenders in his face constantly. 9 sacks in 3 games. Do the math. That's 3 sacks per contest. Plus, that doesn't include all the quarterback hits that he's taken. And Michael Vick takes his fair share of hits by also trying to run with the football. So the Giants can at least throughout the course of the game really try to wear him down by getting their fair share of hits on him. That's another important strategy. They contained Cam Newton. They didn't allow him to run off the edges. They didn't give him a lot of time to throw the football down the field. And when he had time, the coverage was in perfect position. And that's the balance you want. So that even if your front four doesn't get to the quarterback, you're not leaving your secondary out to dry. And when you look at the secondary overall, and I'm assuming Jeremy Maclin is probably going to be back on the field. And Dave Spadaro earlier in the show hinted that Maclin, of the group between he and Cooper, probably is the more likely of the two to suit up Sunday. And Macklin's an important part of that offense because he's the guy underneath that Vic will look for if he doesn't have the big downfield option in DeSean Jackson. Plus, remember, another name I haven't thrown out is Brent Celek. Celek was relatively quiet against the Cardinals. He's another guy that you can't overlook. They utilize their tight end. He's another security blanket for Michael Vick. So the secondary is going to be tested at times throughout this game if Vic has opportunities to make plays down the field. But that job gets a lot easier if you're constantly in the face of Michael Vick. And the Giants will put themselves in a very good position if they can force a turnover or have a game-changing type of play on special teams. Because when we've rattled off all of these turnovers for the Eagles, and they're 12, 6 lost fumbles, 6 picks. It's not all because of the offensive play. They had a special teams turnover in the Cardinals game. That gave Arizona valuable field position. And the Giants have had some game-changing plays on special teams. They had one in the Panthers game. Carolina coughed up the ball. They had one in the Bucs game. You want to make those plays. You want to give Eli Manning a short field. Ball security has been a huge issue for Philadelphia. And if ball security is a huge issue, you want to strip at the football, you want to hit the opposition, you want to test them. The minute you let them comfortable is the minute that you allow them to make big plays down the field. 201-939-4513 is the telephone number. 201-939-4513. A couple of minutes left in the program. Feel free to give us a call if you want to chime in on the conversation as the Eagles and Giants getting ready to square off on Sunday Night Football. A reminder, we're going to have the full radio broadcast here on Giants.com, part of our game day webcast. I will be with you a half hour before kickoff all throughout the game. We'll take your phone calls before and after the game, a full post-game show. So that is another good opportunity to follow the team on game days if you're not near a television or you just would prefer to complement your coverage of the contest with the radio feed. So I certainly invite you to stay tuned to Giants.com on game days and all throughout the week as we post constant updates on injuries, player interviews, and coaches interviews throughout the course of each and every week. And as I mentioned, Tom Coughlin will address the media tomorrow afternoon. They'll start to turn their attention and implement the game plan for the Eagles, and we'll constantly keep you updated on injuries. The big test is to see who can get out on the practice field tomorrow. I think if Dominic Hixon, if Ahmad Bradshaw can perhaps get a practice earlier in the week underneath their belt, that is going to be a good sign that they'll likely play on Sunday. It will also be interesting to keep close tabs on Hosley. How much does he practice? You know, hamstring injuries are tough injuries because you have to monitor them. You don't want them to aggravate them throughout the week, and then you lose them on Sunday. It's a game of management at this point when it comes to the Giants. It's not easy. You got a lot of guys dealing with not necessarily season-ending type of injuries where they're one hit away from perhaps missing tons of weeks. It's just a matter of you don't want to have a guy tweak something during the week. You never want to have a guy tweak something, but you'd rather have him to start the game. So if he tweaks it, at least it happens in the game as opposed to practice, which was the case for Keith Rivers. They got him to get out there against the Panthers. The problem was he tweaked the hamstring, and then he wasn't available the rest of the contest. And Keith Rivers is an important player who they acquired in the offseason from the Bengals, filled in during the preseason for the injured Michael Boley. Extremely versatile, can run sideline to sideline. I think Boley has shown that. The linebacker core overall has played fairly well. This is going to be their next test, especially because of McCoy's versatility as a guy that can go out there and catch passes and also run in the backfield. And Michael Vick alone. He's a guy like Cam Newton. If you allow him to run off the edge, he will take full opportunity of that. And that's why it's imperative for the linebacker core to play at the top of its game and for the Giants once again to dial up the pressure and send the Wolves the way of Michael Vick. You can't make him comfortable. The Ravens have succeeded in that category, the Cardinals have succeeded in that category, and the Cleveland Browns have succeeded. And yes, the Eagles won two of those three contests, but you know what? Two of those three contests were squeakers. As I discussed with Dave Spadaro earlier on the show, you take away those turnovers, those red zone woes, the Eagles probably win those games more comfortably. But who's to say that they're going to correct those issues overnight in the span of a week? If that trend continues, that is an opportunity for the Giants to really turn the game in their favor. And speaking of turning things around, we now welcome back John Schmelk to the party. He is finished
Hello.
With his morning meeting.
Yes.
He is full of these intriguing facts for the Philadelphia Eagles,
I'm sure.
I have
one important nugget, and really? I feel bad because I think I might have given you bad information before the show.
Wonderful.
Let
me see how you embarrassed me already.
Everybody, including people on Sirius this morning, actually had this rule wrong.
Okay.
And you made the good point. I'm sure you read the rule already to the folks.
I did. I read it to the folks. I read both of them.
On the casebook. Well,
yes.
You were correct when you said, but John, this says field of play.
Oh.
Is the end zone the field of play? The answer is the end zone has a different rule. First and goal. Here we go. Here's an example in the casebook. First and goal. On the 5-yard line, player A1 and B1 go up in the air to catch a pass. Officials rule simultaneous catch and a TD for player A. That would, of course, be Golden Tate. Replay show B1 caught the pass. That would be, of course, Jennings.
Okay.
Ruling, reviewable play, touchback. This ruling only applies in the end zone. A review of this play can only be initiated by the replay official. It cannot even be challenged by a coach. So there you go. In the end zone, there are different rules. It is, in fact, a reviewable play because it took place in the end zone.
There you go. See, that's why the terminology of the rule book
yes.
is so critical.
And that's why it's so tough for these replacement refs to do a really good job. I mean, look at this thing. This thing's 200 pages.
It's a Bible.
It's huge. I mean, I wish I'll drop it so that people can hear it. It's big. But you know what I mean? But very interesting. I just talked to a couple people upstairs that are very familiar with the rules. And I was listening coming in to Boomer Esiason. He had the rule wrong on FAN. Other people had the rule wrong last night on ESPN. And that is the actual rule. If it's in the end zone and it gets reviewed by the official replay guy, which, of course, it's a touch scoring play, so it can only be reviewed by the replay official.
So that fits that criteria.
That can be overturned, and you can determine who actually made the catch based off a replay. And I guess my beef then would be, as much as the replacement officials did a bad job with that call on the field, because both guys actually had different calls. One guy called it an interception, another guy called it a touchdown. They have to, you know, huddle and do that. Once you get under the hood, you're talking to an NFL employee up in that replay booth. He's got to know that rule. And I think it was pretty clear, you know, that possession belonged to the Packer player before it belonged to the Seahawk player. And he had possession when he hit the ground. Golden Tate maybe had two hands on the ball, but it was really hard to tell. He probably only had one. And my guess is that this rule might not have been that clear.
Or here's another hypothetical situation. Okay. The replacement official did know the rule, let's say, and they did huddle under the hood, and they did discuss, this is a reviewable play. We can look whether or not we can overturn it. And in their interpretation, which I find hard to believe, they still felt Golden Tate had simultaneous possession.
Well, look, there's no doubt that the Packer player caught the ball first in midair, and he had it before Golden Tate did. Now, the question is, does that constitute possession, or do you have to get 2 feet in to constitute possession? But then there's also a question as to whether or not Golden Tate, when the Packer player hit the ground, whether or not he had two hands on the ball, which I think was hard to tell. I think he might have, but the Packer player certainly had clearer possession than Golden Tate did, having the ball to his chest, and Tate was kind of reaching around trying to grasp at it. So, so there you go. I figured I'd come down here and, you know, give you and just clear that up for you.
Yeah, no, we certainly appreciate that, because this is so complex, as you just alluded
to. It is. I don't know why you would have a different rule in the end zone than you would in the regular field
of play. Well, that's why I questioned that. I saw field of play,
right.
And I said, listen, are
100%.
We sure the end zone is part of the field of play? Because they specifically said field of play and sideline is the two terms that they use in the rule that says you cannot review a simultaneous catch. And now there's another clause that we're learning about that is specifically suitable for an end zone play.
Yeah. You know what? And I'm looking it down here. Non-reviewable situations on passes, they have a simultaneous catch. It's not reviewable. This is a review of this play can only be initiated by the replay official. So in a separate part of that same page in that section, it does say it. But I'd like to have more references here in the book. You know, if you know, not in the end zone, and then go to page whatever, and you can figure it out.
I'll tell you what, they would do themselves justice if they put this up online and they had some video examples.
It actually is online.
Situations.
This book is online.
But do they have video samples?
I do not believe they have video examples. Maybe you should call the people at the NFL.
Well, the NFL's got a lot on its hands right now. I don't think they need to take my phone call, if you get my drift. But it brings up another important debate here.
Yes.
With respect to, do the replay officials know the rule book backwards and forwards like the regular officials
do? I don't think
do.
They do. But I'm not sure if that's their fault, though. They're being put in a very difficult position.
But why not then, moving forward, put them through the same type of seminars and training that the regular officials have to do?
I'm sure they were in the offseason, but you know, these guys are learning the book for the first time, and it's all their first season as NFL officials. It's hard to replicate 15 to 20 years of experience. The NFL can do the best training job ever. Nothing's going to replicate real-life experience. You know what I mean?
Well, we did talk also a lot about Giants-Eagles. We
yes.
had an opportunity, believe it or not, to talk about something related to Big Blue. So before we wrap up the show, I'm sure you have other nuggets, which I am excitedly anticipating.
All right. I have some very good nuggets for you here. Let's see. Well, obviously, Jason Peters, the left tackle for Philly, he is out for the year. King Dunlap, who was replacing him, got hurt last week, so it looks like Demetrius Bell might get the start this week. We'll see exactly where
Jason
they go there.
Kelsey's out, too.
Yes, he is out for the year. Alan Reynolds, who was on the practice squad for 3 years before he started at center. He's been starting at center for Philly. A pretty athletic kid, not the strongest kid in the world. How about this? Average age of the Philadelphia Eagles, 25 and a half years, second youngest team in the NFL. I thought that was pretty interesting. Let's see. First team in NFL history to win their first two games of the season by 1 point. First time that's ever happened. I thought that was interesting. 12 turnovers, obviously, minus six.
Yep.
Since the start of 2011, they've turned the ball over 50 times, and they're at a minus 20 since the start of 2011. They are the fifth-ranked offense. They are the fifth-ranked defense in the league. So there you go. So far this year, unofficially, Vic has been hit 76 times. He's fumbled 5 times, lost 3, 15 interceptions in his last 11 games going back to last year. Fourth most penalized offense in the league, Let's see. 41 offensive possessions. That's the most in the league. 52 plays of 10 yards or more.
See, they've been able to move the football. That's
sure
what that proves.
Have. Yeah, no
it's
question
turnovers
about it.
Have killed them.
They have 12 TDs in the final 2 minutes of halves. So that's either first half or end of the game. That's most in the NFL since the start of 2011. So they're very good at the end of halves to try to score the ball there. That's offensively. Let me see if I could jump to some defense here. They are the fifth-ranked defense. They lead the league in opponents' passer rating. So they're holding opponent quarterbacks to the lowest passer rating of any unit in the league, which I think is interesting. Asamoah's playing a lot better. Not quite to the Pro Bowl level, but they're using him in that bump-and-run coverage, which he's really most effective in. They had 50 sacks in 2011. That was tied for first in the NFL. They don't blitz a lot. They only blitzed 18% of the time last year in 2011.
They got two great guys on the edge.
And Colin Jenkins is also a good pass rusher from the inside. So they're holding teams only 29% on their third-down conversions. That is, I'm not sure where that ranks. I don't have that written down. I can look that up, though. 33 of the 66 points their defense has given up has come off of turnovers. The reason their run defense has been a lot better this year is they have linebackers that can fill the gap much better in that Y9. Michael Kendricks, the rookie, and, of course, you have D'Amico Ryans, the player they acquired in that trade. And those are most of the nuggets that I have here. Fletcher Cox, despite the fact he's not a starter, has played more snaps than any other defensive lineman at defensive tackle. So he's a starter in everything but name. They will play all nine defensive linemen. They'll rotate guys in kind of like hockey shifts.
It keeps him fresh.
Yeah.
And he's one of the young guys.
Oh, there's one of the good Michael Vick nugget here. Where is it? Let me see. He has had, and it had to do with how many tips he's had at the line of scrimmage. Let's see. Here we go. Since 2011, he's had 19 passes knocked down at the line of scrimmage since the start of 2011. That is the most in the NFL, which I thought was interesting.
And that is something that the Giants' front four more specifically, thrived against Cam Newton. So that is something that they'll also look to do if you can't get to the quarterback.
Yeah, no doubt about it. No doubt about it. You know, he's still got great arm strength. Teams have been blitzing the Eagles like crazy.
Oh, yeah.
They don't do a lot of quick hitters in the passing game. You know, we talked about Vic holding the football a lot yesterday. So that's been a problem for Philadelphia. So there's some nuggets for you. You like those nuggets?
A nice plethora of nuggets.
I thought you'd like those.
Yes. You have done good in terms of getting your homework done.
And honestly, I felt bad. I wanted to come down and clarify that rule because everybody seems to have it wrong, you know, around the world of the NFL. But there you go. And the best part is that ESPN is Austin, the former referee, is their, you know, expert official doing and commenting stuff. And he had no clue about any of this last night.
So there you go, Giants fans. You heard it first. The clarification right here on Giants.com.
Well, I'm not sure if I had it first, but we had it. You're wrong but at least,
they clarified and looked at the rule book compared to some other people around the league.
Yes, I suppose that's correct. You know, listening to John Gruden complain about a couple of those things last night, I must admit, did bother me. I feel like a lot of times with these replacement officials now, guys that really don't know the rule book that well feel like they have free reign to complain about every call. For example, the pass interference call that John Gruden said was one of the worst calls he's ever seen in his entire life. Well, let me tell you something. Yeah, Shields had good coverage. But if he's dumb enough in that good coverage to grab somebody's jersey right in front of the referee and yank it, guess what? You're probably going to have a penalty thrown on you. That's the one thing referees look for, sorry, Malroy, is yanked jersey. So that's going to be a call that's going to be made.
It's too bad the listeners couldn't see, by the way, you grabbing Malroy.
The sweatshirt, yes.
I mean, that really added to the whole conversation.
Number two, the roughing the passer penalty that everyone had a huge, you know, thing about. It's in the rule book. You cannot launch yourself at the quarterback's knees and below. It's in the rule book. You cannot do that. That is picture perfect to the book. Exactly what the defensive player did on that play. Walden. It's an easy call. And Gruden and Tirico are whining and complaining about it. What a terrible call it is. When by the book, that was an easy call for the officials to make. This guy's, he's like, oh, I've been in the league, I coach, I study this stuff. Well, guess what? You haven't coached in like 6 years, first of all. There's been a lot of rule changes since you've been here, John. And one of them is the fact that you can't launch yourself at the quarterback's legs. And do you know why that rule is put in? Remember the Ben Roethlisberger play against the Bengals when the player launched at his legs and he tore his ACL and he was out for you know how long? That's why. Same thing for the Tom Brady play that year. Same exact instance where
Chiefs,
a quarterback gets injured. That's to protect the quarterback. It isn't called all that often, but it doesn't happen a lot. But that was a perfect example. What happens if poor Russell Wilson tears up his knee on that play? That's why you have those rules to protect the quarterback.
Player safety. Yeah, the other call that could have been made, and I think you probably said that it shouldn't have, the offensive pass interference in the end zone. I know it's not called a lot on Hail Marys.
It should have been called. It should have been called, though. But I've seen that happen a million times and hasn't been called. Even by the regular referees, I think that's an issue. It's like the same deal. We like making cross-sport examples here. But that's a play that's just never called. It reminds me of the NBA. When there's a loose ball, the first guy dives on it, the second guy can do whatever he wants to the first guy that dives in the ball. As long as he gets two hands on it, they call it a jump ball. They climbs on him, elbows him, jumps on him. Doesn't
smacks
make a difference.
In the face, yeah.
Exactly. It's the same deal in the Hail Mary. You can do whatever you want to these guys. A penalty is just not going to be thrown. But yeah, that Golden Tate put two hands in the back on Shields and just beep.
And by the way,
yeah, beep.
Can Golden Tate at least... I mean, the video replay now that we have in this day and age, it's clear that he pushed off. In a post-game interview, can you at least admit and acknowledge that you got away with one? Who are you trying to fool at this point?
You could smile and wink. You don't have to actually say, I pushed off. But you can go, I got a little physical down there.
And real quickly, I know we're doing an extended edition of Big Blue Kickoff as I look at the clock. Credit to the Packers for coming out for that extra point there.
Yeah, I suppose.
Given the circumstances... I think that does say a lot about the team.
And I thought Mike McCarthy did a pretty good job in the postgame press conference, too. He did not kill these guys, and I think... And, you know, I want to make this point again. Look, the referee labor situation, look, we're employees of the Giants. We're not going to comment on it. It is what it is. They'll figure it out. These guys are really doing the best job they can, and they're being put in a position that's very difficult. They're doing the best job they can. And look... They're trying. Mistakes are being made, but mistakes were made when the regular officials were there, too. And
it's just you hate to see a game end like this.
You hate to see it. You do. And it was not good. But that being said, you know, Seattle played well. Their defense is legit. They have a very, very, very good defense.
The NFC West overall, big surprise.
You might have the three best defensive teams in all the NFL, let alone the NFC. Sitting in the NFC West with the Seahawks, the Cardinals, and the 49ers. I feel bad for the Rams. They're not going to win any games this year.
They got to play all three of those defenses. They don't get a break in the division.
Usually, you
get one opponent that you can say, all right, it's a winnable game.
Yeah.
It's going to be tough for them.
Guess what? For that division, it's the Rams.
Everybody's going to beat up on St. Louis.
You know what? Fisher does a good job as a head coach, and they almost beat the Lions that 1 week, and then they beat the Redskins in week two. So the Rams, really, they have actually played fairly decently this year, too. So maybe the NFC West not going to be as much of a walkover as people think. It'll be interesting.
And that will be a division that the Giants will see some opponents from.
Yes, you're right. And we're back on Friday.
Correct.
That should be fun.
And we will probably have a Pat Hanlon
appearance
on Friday.
And I'll make sure I'll let you ask the officiating questions.
Oh, absolutely. I'm not going to hold back on that one.
Go for it.
And Anita Marks and Paul DeTito will be with you on Big Blue Kickoff the next two mornings.
Yep.
John Schmelk and I back on Friday, as he just touched on. Continue to follow Giants.com for the latest injury news as the Giants will move in the right direction tomorrow to start preparing for the Philadelphia Eagles' big division game on Sunday. For John Schmelk,
hey,
I'm Lance Meadow.
Bye-bye.
Have a good one.